Kelly, can you hear the emotion on that electric guitar?
I'm feeling it.
I mean, I know you're a big country girl. How are you feeling for this season finale episode here? I mean, I purposely played a country song because there's going to be a lot of feeling, a lot of emotion, at least maybe on my end. Probably not. But
I'm wiping away the tears as we speak. It was all, I thought you were going to say you were playing it
cry,
all.
Cry, damn it.
On cue. Got it.
Well, listeners, welcome. This is the last episode of season three of Wisco Weekly. So on behalf of myself and Kelly Cruz, as well as some of the other guests that have been joining around, be it if they were a featured guest or a co-host, thank you all for listening. I got to tell you, when I first started season three in kind of this new format, I didn't know where it would go. And it certainly started out slow, but it has actually ended up going pretty well now.
It's been a good development. I think personally I've heard some good feedback, and it's been more kind of inspiring to have the conversations than just listening sometimes to a dialogue. So I think it's been a good turn, and hopefully people are enjoying it.
So I have a question for you.
Okay.
Wisco Weekly is I don't want to say it's world famous, but we definitely have some listeners outside the United States. The United States is definitely our biggest population. But can you guess where our second and third highest set of listeners are in the world?
Depends why they're listening. So a couple thoughts. Maybe because you have ties to the Czech Republic, because you're a spy. Just kidding.
Well, I'm somehow associated with the KGB based in the Czech Republic. Okay, I get
you. Or your beautiful wife. Maybe Czech Republic listeners or places that are producers, manufacturers of cars like Japan.
Good
guess. Are a couple guesses.
Why not the Philippines?
I do love the Philippines, but.
But you didn't guess that one.
I didn't.
So the second country that we get the most listens from, the land down under.
Australia.
Hello, Aussies.
Oh, well, I'm not going to try the accent, but we've had this conversation. We like the Australian accent.
We do like the Australian accent. So hello to the land down under. The third country that we get the most listens from, Israel.
Was it because of our shout outs to Israel and the one episode?
That was actually dating back to episode one, but yes, I imagine so. I mean, after the U.S., it goes Australia, Israel, and then we actually have the Republic of Korea, which I'm taking South Korea, to be the fourth country of most listens. So,
very exciting.
Yeah. So hello to all of our listeners outside of the United States. Thanks for tuning in to the podcast. I greatly appreciate it. I'm sure, Kelly, you do too.
I do as well. I'm actually surprised. It's one thing to be outside of, I'm sure in the beginning, outside of California. And I understand now we have nationwide listeners based on guests that we've had on and all of that. But pretty interesting to hear about listeners outside of the country. So very exciting.
Well, and Kelly, just as a, to have a moment with you, I want to also thank you for serving as a regular co-host on the show here. And certainly you provide not only a female voice, but you provide the balance. And again, I think one of the reasons why it's great to have you on is that you do represent the car buyer. And so to hear about all these different things going on, to me, it does seem like it's having an effect on you and shaping how you view what the car business, what it truly is like and what it will be in the future. So it's not something for you to be apprehensive about.
Yeah, it's been, I think it encourages a positive experience that there's changes that are for the better and exciting to see what the future holds. And, you've helped me step back and think about different perspectives. I think you questioned on one of the episodes that it's not just about, there was some general statement around the car industry and you said, maybe it's about your perception, meaning, like each of us as individuals kind of have different thoughts around the buying process. And so it helps kind of shift the thinking around the whole process.
Well, listeners, as we break for after season three, and get, as we get ready for season four. So there'll be some, hopefully some things that I'm working on that, that I'll introduce to you in season four. But to end this particular season, Kelly, I thought we would discuss something that is fairly practical to the customer experience, and something that literally does not get talked about, but it's super, super interesting. And that is architecture, and specifically of dealerships, because this is really the one area and perhaps the one reason why the dealership will never go away, because they do have the best looking facility of among other businesses that are out there, right, consistently. I mean, of course, you can look to a Google campus, the Apple campus, but aside from that, like when you're looking at these showrooms, they're just phenomenal. And these are, these are million-dollar showrooms that both the dealership and the manufacturer have invested in for the customer experience. Now, some of the struggle in these showrooms is the fact that they're, A, not as modernized. And so in order to modernize it, sometimes then you're going to have to spend millions of dollars to upgrade it, to renovate it. But as we'll hear from our guest, Trent Clark, there are improvements you can make to your dealership without having to go to that full-blown commitment of renovating your dealership. So that's what I want you to hear today. I want the listeners to hear it as this final episode, are what are the small improvements that dealerships can make to their facility to enhance the customer experience?
I'm a modern architect. I can design any style. I put my first vehicle together. It was a 1947 Ford pickup, and when I was 15 years old, I bought it, and it was in pieces, and I didn't even know, at that time, we didn't have internet, so I didn't even know what a 47 Ford truck looked like. And so my dad and I, we put it in the back of a trailer and two pickup trucks and hauled everything home. And by the time I was 16 and a half, I had built a truck.
My name is Trent Clark. I am the principal of A-Plus Design Group, an architecture, interiors, and planning firm based in Dallas, Texas.
A-Plus Design Group and their principal architect, Trent Clark, and the owner. So I came across these guys, again, this is another interview that was conducted at NADA. And I came across them because they have certainly made a name for themselves in a niche subset of the automotive industry, and that being car washes. So in addition to designing dealerships, they have designed a number of car washes all across the United States.
Interesting.
And I forget exactly how he came across this. I think it was just one of those things that it was a friend of a friend that recommended him to do a car wash. And after they did one, then it's like they became known as like the car wash architects. So then if you even go to their Facebook page, you can see this, you know, more or less modern influence or postmodern influence architecture that Trent has designed for these companies. Now, of course, at the end of the day, he's still going to do what the client asks for, so it may not be as completely postmodern as what he would like. But Trent Clark, he's the son of a contractor. He's, you know, as you heard from him, I mean, he built his first car, or he built his first car, a Ford 1947 Ford pickup, which was, this is the original F series Ford truck. Mm-hmm. And it's a classic Ford truck that you would see nowadays. But he started out with his dad being a contractor. His brother is a contractor and still in the business. And so now he is an architect, and he still gets involved, still gets his hand dirty in building car washes and dealerships. But it was interesting to talk to Trent because we started to talk about, or at least I started picking apart some of the practical tips he would advise a dealer to improve the flow of a dealership using some of the methodologies that he knows of.
So first, I just want to hang out with Trent. There's just those people that they say a couple things and you're like, I just want to hang out with you and have a drink, because I don't know if he drinks or not, but hang out because you know they have the interesting stories. And to start a conversation with someone like, I built a pickup truck that like we loaded the pieces in the back of my dad's car and I didn't even have a diagram to know what I was building. That's pretty cool. Second, car wash. There's something about like childhood experience. Maybe it's just our age, that car washes when I was little were a fun event. Like you got to go to the car wash with your parents, and I can like envision That's walking very true, into actually. The car wash, mm-hmm. standing on the chair or the bench to see the car, you know, like through the window, the car getting scrubbed down and the pink soap getting sprayed on the car. And like at the end of the story, you know, then you find your candy or your drink or like an air freshener to buy. I don't know. Like just a car wash has a nostalgic experience tied to it. And I think that things have changed over the years now that you have these automatic car washes that you push a couple buttons and drive through them. But like my kids are still excited to drive into a car wash. There's something fun about sitting in your car, rolling up the windows and watching the washer or, you know, whatever go over it. So.
And you'll see here from some of these pictures and listeners, if you get the chance, go on their Facebook page, and you can see some of the car wash facilities that A Plus Design Group has built. But it's pretty damn cool. But aside from it being cool, again, there's still a method to all this madness. And again, I think this is where the practical side of architecture comes in. And again, this is never really talked about, but I often actually have an eye for this. You probably know this of me. Like I like functional things, you know. I have racks in my garage, but those racks aren't just racks. They're on wheels. I have to have things on wheels because there's a functional component to it.
But they're not earthquake proof, according to your wife.
They're not earthquake proof, but they don't need to be earthquake proof when they're on wheels because they'll just kind of move with the earthquake.
Right.
And so I'm looking forward to you hearing about some of the practical advice that Trent would give to any dealership in order to improve the flow and the general feel and perception and ambiance of a dealership.
It's your what they call the wayfinding system, which is signage on the site. When you enter a site, it says enter here. When they start entering into the site, there's a arrow that says customer parking over here or service over here. It's real simple to create a wayfinding system of small signs that direct people where they should go.
So this wayfinding concept is popular in architecture. And I think that it's also underplayed or underestimated at a dealership, because even when they do put signs up, those signs are pretty innocuous. Like, you know, they might have a sign in a planter where you think you would notice it, but the font is too small. And even I, coming from the car business, knowing that one of the biggest issues customers face when they arrive at a dealership is finding parking. And so even I, knowing that, when I go visit dealerships and I try to find where their parking is, and it's still hard for me to find it, knowing that I know it's going to be hard to find it.
Right.
This is a problem. And I do think that if we can start to take a look at or start to evaluate what Trent's talking about of this wayfinding system, how do customers get to your, not even just get to the dealership, once they're at the dealership, how do they navigate around it? And there's not many of these wayfinding methods that dealerships do employ.
Absolutely. I can completely envision driving into dealerships and feeling like you don't know which entrance to go into. And then once you go in, which way is service versus, what's the right word? The main center, not the service center,
like, but just like sales,
right? Like so the sales center, the right. You know, where do you park? Is this parking spot somewhere I can park, or are they going to ask me to move my car? And so I think it's a really important, you know, first glance at the dealership and first impression of when you drive in, feeling like you weren't lost and you knew exactly where to go. And I can only imagine if it's difficult for someone like you and me, having, you know, like my mom go there and just feel a lot of anxiety about not knowing where to go, to start that experience.
And again, it's very simple and basic. If you follow this wayfinding system, the idea that wherever a customer, you know, it's as opposed to letting the customer choose where they want to go, you know, it's almost like in the customer experience concept, yes, you kind of want to accommodate the customer to an extent, right? Mm-hmm. In the wayfinding system, it's more like, no, dealership, this is your ability and this is your time to have the authority over customers, because now you can dictate to them what to do and how to experience your dealership from the initial arrival of the customer.
Maybe this is a bit of a tangent, but with my recent car purchase, I went back 2 months after I bought the car for service. And kind of the arrows to go to service and the sales center were in the same spot. And so I pull up under the awning of this Acura dealership. And it's not very clear whether I just stop under that awning for service or if I actually pull into the service center. So I thought, well, they must mean I actually start to pull into the service center. And I see the guy standing there eating lunch. I'm looking at them. They're looking at me. And instead of being, you know, telling me, stop there, over, come in here. Right. No one says anything. So it's getting more awkward by the moment. And I start pulling forward and then they're like shooing me back. Like, no, don't drive in here. But it was very unclear. It felt very uncomfortable. So that was not a good experience.
And so, you know, if you juxtapose what it's like to arrive at a dealership versus a car wash, and specifically, as we'll hear a little bit more, but Trent has a very, you know, and this, it's kind of nice to hear this from an architect. It's like, mm-hmm. Look, you need to provide a very specific set of instructions, because if you let customers to their own vices, they're going to screw it up for everybody.
We focus on where we can get more light into the space, make it feel more comfortable, get furniture, definitely, you know, upgraded, higher quality furniture that's clean and light and feels comfortable. And then focus on the space and the finishes of the space. We you know, it might need new tile, it might need new wall surfaces, new lighting inside is very important. There's a lot of old yellow lighting and yellow ceilings that, you know, once you renovate those and clean those up and get new modern lighting, it helps the customer experience a lot.
So one of the things that he really does emphasize is just in general lighting up the mm-hmm. space, right? If it's the actual lights themselves or just furniture tiles that you would have that are darker, try to just brighten that up a little bit, because it just provides more clarity to what customers are looking at and what they're doing. I will tell you though, he does say something that he kind of just says under his breath, but I do think that this is I do think that this would be a practice that can be indicative of the entire experience, and that is making sure your dealership is clean.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's the one word that stuck with me.
Yeah. I mean, it's actually very shocking where what clean would mean, and a lot of times is, okay, let's just sweep the floors mm-hmm. and let's make sure the cars are clean. And after that, we're good to go. But man, like when you start to get to the lounge areas and there's dust on the tables and the couch, and then of course, you know, in the lounge areas in service where you might have kids and then kids have just left their stuff around, like you gotta pay attention to that stuff. And I think this is one of those things that it's like, as a whoever the owner or the general manager is, perhaps a far stretch, but this is according to a guy that I highly admire at the moment, Jordan Peterson. We talked about him. But the whole idea of if you can keep your room clean, if you can keep your house clean, then you can take on the other complex problems of the world. Mm-hmm. And so it's like for the dealerships I visit in which it's not clean, I want to go to that GM or that owner's house to see how they take care of their own house.
I am a germaphobe, so I am completely on board here. I think about going to a restaurant and the high chairs that I get for my kids. And for the first 2 years of their lives, I had two separate seat covers for my two kids. And everywhere I went, it was like those seat covers have to go on the chairs because they're disgusting. Mm. Now I've gotten away from that because it's a hassle, but it's just, it's, being able to walk into a place and experience cleanliness makes so much of a difference. I don't care if it's a modern chair or how sleek it is or what color it is, but if there's stains on it or like crumbs left on it, it's a real turnoff.
I mean, it's almost like at a very basic level, even before you get to lightening up the space, like get it clean first.
Right.
And if getting it clean means getting new furniture, new tile, new carpet, then mm-hmm. Do that then.
You want to carve out spaces usually closer to the glass for customers to hang out. Give them a place to sit. Get them a place to that another salesperson can come talk with them without having to kind of hide them through find them through a maze.
I know firsthand that this is in terms of a dealer laying out a showroom, I know firsthand how this is a bit of a struggle. Because on one hand, the showroom that a dealership has is prime real estate. And you don't want to let that real estate go to waste. So then it becomes this trial and error of what you do to have the cars, have the experience, have the memorable experience that customers deserve when they go into your dealership. However, it also seems as if then the balance is to overwhelm the customer by putting in a copious amount of cars in the showroom at different angles, taking up as much space as they can because they just know that that showroom is prime real estate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something he mentioned seating, and it was making me think about experiences I've had where you see a car and then someone directs you to their desk to sit down. And inevitably, they only ever have one chair. And I get kind of the idea of saving space and being a minimalist, but then you're dragging a chair over. And then the chair that they drag over kind of blocks the way that the person, the dealer or the salesperson has to get around their desk. So every time they go in and out to go talk to the manager about the price, then you're moving your chair in and out. And it's just, it's not an efficient, comfortable process. And there has to be a way to set up the seating. You know that that's going to happen with every sale, that you're going to have one, maybe two people come into your office that you're going to walk in and out. And so why not have, some type of setup or seating that's more modern and efficient, that's not dragging large, chairs, on wheels in and out just, of people's offices.
And it's obstacles now that are in the way, which again, this is where it was enlightening to talk to Trent, because again, it's like without having to undergo the multi-million-dollar renovation, like, look, here are some subtle changes you can make to your dealership that would enhance the quote unquote customer experience.
One of them is I like the win because I just like the simplicity of the buildings. Are they exciting? No, but what's housed around them and how they hit the ground and
what do you mean how they hit the ground?
How the building touches the ground. It's very important on a building. You don't want it just to slam into a piece of earth and be very boring. It's very brutalist in a way.
Now, that same look you just gave me of like quandary, mm-hmm. like what the hell does that mean? That's the same thing that went on my mind when I asked him that question or when he said that answer. And even till this day, like when you think about it though, and again, you can even look at your own house now, and that's kind of what I did. It's like how a building hits the ground.
When he said the Wynn, does he mean the Wynn Hotels?
The Wynn Hotel in Las Vegas, right. Yeah. So it's one of those things where when a building hits the ground, it can be a bit rough, where there's nothing to mask the building going into the ground. And even if you want to bring up a parking structure, even if you want to, as he says, even build up, you know, some of the bushes, the flowers, you can soften up how the building goes into the ground by, again, either, you know, I think what's common is adding floral, adding landscape,
mm-hmm.
things of that nature. And that, again, it often goes overlooked, but if you think of any dealership that you go to, when you enter, there are some dealerships that you, when you enter their parking lot and then their building just comes out of the ground, it's almost a bit uninspiring.
Right. It could almost be like you show up and it's more of a warehouse. So there was no impression when you drove onto the lot. When you walk in, it could be a different experience or it could be uninspiring as well. Versus when you first pull up, if there's something to make it more appealing or attractive. It's interesting because we've been doing some renovations on our house. Mm. And one of the things we have to pick is new backsplash for the kitchen. And I was at my brother's house the other day and I looked at the backsplash and I said, is that a new backsplash? He's like, no, it's the same one we've had for, you know, 3 years, 4 years. But I've never taken notice of the backsplash before because I wasn't thinking about the importance of backsplash. And I think it's the same thing. You go up to a dealership, and if we didn't have this conversation or someone wasn't thinking about the impact of it, you may not even notice. But once you start taking notice of it, it's more meaningful.
Yeah, so it's landscape. It's the wayfinding. It's all these little intricate things about a dealership that you don't really think about, that I know a dealer doesn't think about because, again, it looks just very outdated in many dealerships.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are just the little tweaks that you don't have to spend millions of dollars on. You could just spend thousands of dollars on to improve. I mean, even as little as pavement, you know, it's sometimes I'm surprised at how like dealership lots will go years without looking to repave their lot just for the simple aesthetic beauty of having a fresh paved dealership lot.
When you live in it every day, you just don't see it.
Right, right.
And so I think it has to be an outside consultant or it has to be feedback from customers saying, how was your customer experience?
Which customers wouldn't point that out though either. I mean, I think it's one of those rare things that they would always talk about probably in the privacy of their own home. But to bring that out in the open, I mean, they're going to be focusing on more the deal, how they were treated in the process of buying the car, as opposed to, oh, I would have felt much better and more comfortable about me arriving at your dealership if there were birds of paradise, you know, looking at me.
But you get through the car buying process and most of the times you get a customer survey and there's segments to the survey about how, you know, what did you feel when you walked in? Did you get the car you wanted? How has the car been since you bought it? Why couldn't the first section be ambiance of the dealership? You know, could you have felt better about the experience if something was improved upon when you arrived and what is your feedback? But not that you need to go quite to that level, but just saying that to get an outside perspective, you may get feedback that helps sink in the idea of it's not a great experience or it could be improved upon and you just haven't noticed it because you live in it every day.
Well, and certainly, I mean, this is the time now when there is a separation of the winners and losers of dealerships where, you know, the dealerships that aren't committing to the customer and the customer experience, those are the dealers that probably won't be around much longer. They're either going to get bought out or they'll go out of business. And if you are planning to stay around for the next few years or so, then it is worth the investment to evaluate the aesthetic appearance, the functional space of your dealership to ensure that it is meeting the needs and the desires and the unspoken desires, if you will, of today's customer.
Yep.
If you let people have to think too long, then they clog up the line.
Simple and sweet. That's exactly what that is right there. If you don't provide a, you know, wayfinding points, if you don't soften up the way your building hits the ground, And if you're just relying on the customer to find their way, well, unfortunately, Kelly, in this world, there are stupid people.
I do not dispute that.
And so if you leave people up to their own vices, and look, to a certain extent, we can be part of those. We can be part of that identity. It's happened to us where we arrive at a dealership and we're completely lost and we end up causing, you know, traffic behind us because we have no idea where to go.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't provide these, you know, easy points of access, an easy flow, a clean environment, then you essentially can be clogging up what other customers will eventually experience at your store.
You have to build a brand. I was just thinking about Apple. Like, you see an Apple store and you know what it's going to look like. You know it's going to have the glass windows on the front where you can look through and see all the people enthralled over the latest Apple invention, kind of working on the devices. Or you can go to the very back of the Apple store to kind of talk to customer service representatives or see a demonstration of the newest Apple device. So they've built a brand, and I would think that car dealerships should be able to do the same, where from the moment you walk up, you have an expectation of what you're going to get, and you feel kind of the love of that dealership from the time that you pull into the parking lot to the time that you drive away in your car.
And it's an unspoken love too, right? Again, because it's one of those things that it's not obvious from the outset that you were able to find this easy parking space, and it was nice to walk up to the showroom doors and go from the showroom doors to the receptionist or look at cars in the showroom. Like, it's not one of those obvious facts that you would come back to and say, oh, aha,
mm-hmm.
I knew I had a great experience because they laid out their dealership well.
About 2 years ago, I had a client, he was a doctor, that came to us and he wanted an office building that looked like the Alamo in Texas, in San Antonio.
Okay.
And we were just like, why would you want to do that? And so he had this whole theory that, you know, he was a mission, he was a good Christian man, and I believe it's my mission to help other people, and I go out to other countries and I help them with their medical needs, and so I just want my building to look like the Alamo.
Hey, listeners, thanks very much for tuning in to this last episode of Season 3 of Wisco Weekly. I'm always thankful and grateful for the listens, and I will always try to be careful on what your ears consume from me. And so I hope an episode like this was fairly fun and entertaining and valuable, and at the very least, it served as some form of escapism for you. I want to say thanks to Heidi Jesko and, of course, Mr. Trent Clark for helping put this episode together. You can check out A Plus Design Group on their website, apdg.us. And you can also check out the episode notes for their contact information. Season 4 of Wisco Weekly will start up towards August, so be on the lookout for that. In the interim, there may be a few bonus episodes that I will launch or publish until we start Season 4 up. Of course, you can always subscribe to this podcast or follow us on Facebook or Twitter at Wisco Weekly Pod. And as we end every episode, cheers, pros, lahaim, kipish, nastravi, salut, kampai, mabruk to the customer experience.